this is, again, not important.
Welcome to Breathing Flames, the tabletop gaming podcast from IslayTheDragon.com. I'm John, also known as Farmer Lenny on I Slay the Dragon, and today we'll be talking about bias in board game reviews. It seems like nary a week goes by before a new thread on BoardGameGeek or Reddit crops up accusing some reviewer of bias, of not disclosing review copies, of giving every game a stamp of approval, or of just sounding like an infomercial whenever games are the subject. The constant refrain of bias has raised several questions for us at I Slay the Dragon, whose primary function is written board game reviews. What is the purpose of a review? What are the best practices for a publisher-reviewer relationship? And why is there so much positivity in a hobby where not every game is destined to be an evergreen? With me to explore this topic today is fellow Dragon Slayer and I Slay the Dragon founder, Wolfie.
Greetings!
So, Wolfie, why don't you start us off by describing why you started I Slay the Dragon in the first place and how board game reviews came to be?
That's a fair question. So I started writing board game reviews, I think just because I'm a creative person and I like writing and I like expressing my thoughts about things that I have. And when you play a game and you express your thoughts, your friends are kind of like, okay, yeah, whatever. And you're like, okay, that was not as satisfying. I need to shout my thoughts to the world. So I think just after playing board games for a while, it became a natural extension for me to just start writing about them, and writing about them on a blog was a natural way to do it. The website originally started out as my RPG blog, because at the time my weekly gaming group played more RPGs than board games. But as time went on, as happens to many groups, I think, it became harder to maintain a consistent RPG campaign. And so then we would play board games when not everyone could show up. And then eventually it was just playing board games all the time. And so then you and I started playing board games at lunch, at work, and I was playing board games all the time and I had thoughts about them. And it's just kind of a fun way to share thoughts about what's going on when you play a game. And certainly at the time, review copies were not even like a thing that it didn't occur to me, like, oh, people might send us games. I hoped maybe that the site would grow and people would read. That's why you put stuff out there. But I didn't think that it would gain a ton of traction. And we're still a small website, but I think we get a decent number of views for what I hoped we might accomplish someday. But mostly it's just fun to talk about games because I like to talk about things. What about you? What's your story?
For me, a thing isn't really complete until I've written about it. When I was in college, I used to write music reviews for our college newspaper. I used to write book reviews for various publications online and for my own blog and internally at work. I guess it's part of the impulse that makes me still do. I'm involved in a lot of book clubs and other things like that. I don't feel like an experience is complete until I've analyzed it, discussed it, and really feel like I've gotten to the bottom of it. And so around, let's see, this would have been 2010, I discovered hobby board games, or I at least got farther into the hobby. I was playing Acquire and Settlers of Catan before that, but this is when I started heavily getting into it. It's when I discovered Dominion, basically, that ruined everything.
I'm sorry.
No, yeah, thanks for teaching it to me. Yeah, Wolfie introduced me. So once I started finding these new board games, I wanted to really think about what made them tick, why I liked them, why I didn't like them. And so for me, reviewing was a natural way to do that. Yeah, at the start, there wasn't any thought of even other people reading the reviews. I posted them on my blog, my personal blog, but I mean, I guess a few people from work read my ramblings there, but definitely didn't expect a growing website. So I Slay the Dragon, as you mentioned, it's still fairly small, but it's still bigger than I thought it would be. You mentioned at the beginning that review copies weren't really part of the equation, weren't really an expectation. Do you remember the first review copy you received, and do you feel like it changed anything?
The first significant review copy I remember getting was Sentinels of the Multiverse. we had gotten some, I think, people looking for reviews for their like really, really crappy, obscure, like underdeveloped games. And I don't even know if we took any of those, but this was finally like, oh, someone like made a game. You can buy it in stores and they want us to review their game. And I immediately sold out. I saw dollar signs. That's all I cared about. I don't even.
This sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. I just was like, here we are. We've made it. No, I'm kidding. Obviously. No, I don't think it affected anything other than I was very excited that like someone cared enough about our existence to give us something for free so that we would review it. And it was the same as any other game. We played it a bunch of times. We had some games that were really fun, some that didn't go quite as well. It wasn't a raving review, I think. I mean, I think it's a good game, and I think the second edition fixed a lot of the problems. If I recall, and you can fact check this, go on our website, look for that first Sentinels of the Multiverse review. I believe we offered some criticisms about it.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, the guys who made it still seemed, you know, pleased with the review. And that's always nice when you're not just raving about a game and they still appreciate that you took the time to play it and write about it.
Yeah, I remember those sessions where we played Sentinels of the Multiverse. We played it many times, which is usually our review policy on I Slay the Dragon anyways. We like to play it a game enough times to get a full picture of everything that can happen, everything that could go wrong. Obviously, you know, you can't play a game 50 times or you won't review anything. But yeah, I do remember it wasn't necessarily a raving review, although we did recognize there was a spark of something there. It was kind of an interesting time at Isolated Dragon because that kind of opened us to other publishers getting in contact with us. What percentage of what we do is at the service of publishers? That is, a publisher sends us something and we review it.
Now, I think it's got to be like 90% or higher. I don't know the exact percentage because I don't track what all of the writers are doing. And there's like five of us, six of us. I've lost count. I can only count as high as Kenneth, our dragon's three-fingered hand. So
sounds like six is right. Two hands, two claws.
I mean, I'm not micromanaging everyone. I'm not keeping track of everyone's review copies. But I think most of the games we review by a wide margin are review copies that either we request from the publisher and they agree, sure, they'll send it, or that publishers reach out to us and ask us if we are interested in looking at their games.
I mentioned at the beginning of this episode that every week, it seems, there's a new thread on BoardGameGeek or Reddit or other channels about the role of the reviewer, the role that bias plays in a review, and accusations that receiving review copies from a publisher necessarily inclines you to like something. What would you say to something like that?
I think that's reasonable to say that can happen. I think it would be silly to say, no, like there's no bias just because we got a review copy. I think that it can be easy as a reviewer to look kindly on something that you have been given as a gift. I think people tend to look kindly on board games in general, but it's not a guarantee. And I don't think that there's a wide swath of reviewers who will rave about a game that's just horrible. Yeah. I think that different people have different tastes and people seek out what matches their tastes. And I mean, this point gets hammered home every time this thread comes up, but yeah, people look for the games they think they're going to like, and so they tend to get games that they like. So reviews tend to be positive. I can't speak to anyone specifically and say, oh, that person only gives positive reviews because they just want more free games. We kind of joke about it sometimes internally, like, well, if a game is bad, why would we want more bad games that we have to play? Like, we have plenty of games that we want to play, some of them review copies, some of them the games that we have bought on our own, and there's not enough time to play every game. So if a publisher is sending us bad games,
yeah,
what's our motive to get more bad games? We don't want that.
And yes, that certainly makes sense. And there are certain channels, I think the Dice Tower obviously is the main one, that they seem to review everything that comes out. And I think there's certainly a place for that. And I think there's a reason why the Dice Tower seems to give out more negative reviews, just because they're reviewing a lot more. As you mentioned on Isolate the Dragon, a lot of the games that we get are specific requests from publishers. We know we can't look at everything. And so the six writers together kind of decide if we want to ask for something, if there's a game that catches our attention, we'll either buy it, we'll ask the publisher to provide a copy, which may or may not happen. And so a lot of the games that we review, you're right, are kind of self-selected for according to our bias. So in that sense, there does seem to be at least a bias toward positivity. But that isn't always a surefire way to get a positive review, because there are so many games that I look at and I think, wow, that matches my taste perfectly. And then I play it and it just falls flat. I'm thinking this is a game that I bought, and I think I'm actually more well-disposed to like games that I purchase than games that I receive as a gift, just because I have that personal buy-in. But I remember I bought a game on Kickstarter a long time ago called Viva Java. And if there was ever a game that was made for me, I feel like it was Viva Java, because I love coffee. I love the brewing of coffee, the drinking of coffee, the roasting of coffee. I like reading about where it comes from. You know, I just really enjoy coffee. And the mechanism sounded interesting too. Blind draws from a bag. That's great. I love blind draws from a bag. But this game just did not work for me. I didn't play it enough times for review, but I think there's certain, I think that plays into it too. The kinds of things that we play enough times for review, nobody wants to play a bad game 8 times to be able to adequately write about it. The bad games that we end up writing about, we have some kind of obligation to fulfill. So the publisher sent it to us and we don't feel right playing a game thinking it's bad and not telling anybody about it. If the publisher sent it to us, we're going to write a review.
You know, there are a few different kinds of reviewers out there. And there are the reviewers who kind of have a personality. And I hope that we have a personality that people can kind of sense. But we, at the very least, we are pretty thorough in how we review games. We talk about just about every aspect of a game and why we liked it or didn't like it. So there's like a scale of like, we're kind of on the end of like being really thorough and writing a lot. And then there's kind of a far opposite end, which is just like giving a summary of the rules and then being like, yeah, I liked it. And I feel like I could be wrong about this. I have no data to back this up, but I feel like that's the kind of review that like gets in people's minds. It's just like, oh, those people are just saying something nice because they want to get more games. And like, maybe those people aren't as analytical, or maybe they don't care as much, or maybe they're just trying to get started and trying to get more games. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't have a specific name, but I feel like it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you see a lot of those reviews out there and then that kind of gets in your head and then you get frustrated about it. And then and then someone else writes a review, you know, one of the bigger names that does more thorough reviews writes a review and that's positive about a game you don't like. And then it just kind of like explodes and you're like, ah, reviewers, they just write positive things all the time. When really it's just like, no, like, sure, there's a bunch of people who don't put a ton of effort into reviews. And, you know, that's fine. They can, you know, it's their choice to write what they want about games. But mm-hmm. I think that just becomes a big blob of what people perceive.
I should also mention that the rewards for negative reviews are non-existent. So in all of these conversations about bias, I read people talking about, oh, board game reviews are always so positive. We want some negative reviews every once in a while. And I can tell you, without exception, every negative review I've written has been blasted in the comments section. I remember the review I wrote for Yamatai last summer. I wrote the review of Yamatai, Bruno Catala, Days of Wonder. It seemed like the game was getting praise everywhere you turn, and I just didn't like it. I ended up playing it, I think, 4 times at all the player counts. I tried different strategies. I looked at it every which way I could, and I just thought, this is a boring game that's going to be forgotten. I would like to point out now that I feel like I've been vindicated because no one is talking about Yamatai despite everyone's pleas that this is the next great thing from Bruno Catala. No, King Domino was the next great thing from Bruno Catala. But anyway, after I wrote this review on Board Game Geek, it just seemed like everyone was coming out with these comments like, you didn't play it enough, or you clearly didn't understand what you were doing. And I'm like, you know, this is what people say they want. And yet every time a negative review is written, I feel like the reward is, yeah, you didn't play it enough.
Yeah, didn't Alex just recently post a review of Feudum? And
yes,
that was not a raving positive review, and quickly the fans of Feudum jumped on it and said, oh, you are condescending and you didn't play enough. There were some veiled accusations of inflated play counts and stuff like that. Like, okay, like, take it easy, people. I do think, though, that in the Venn diagram of people blasting negative reviews and people demanding more negative reviews, there's probably not a huge overlap. It's just that the internet is so big that no matter what you do, you get a bunch of people mad at you.
That could be true. However, the people sticking up for the negative review are few and far between. So I suppose this would be the time to restate what they say on the Metra. If you see something, say something. In other words, if you like something, tell somebody, because they're going to remember that. Hopefully more than the negative comments, but no, the negative comments always stick with you.
Everybody loves to accuse reviewers of having bias, but everyone has bias. And it's like those people leaving angry comments and negative views, it's like their bias is showing through. They liked a game, and so they can't accept that someone objectively played a game several times and just like didn't like it and has actual reasons why they didn't like it. Or someone who is angry that there isn't enough negative reviews out there is just biased and feels like, oh, they don't like these games, so how can other people like these games? That's just how people are. They're biased. You have a knee-jerk reaction to defend your own opinion and claim that you were right. And it's hard to accept that other people can have valid opinions that differ from you that are backed up by reason and thought and are not just pandering or being angry for no reason.
I just read a review today by Dan Therott of Space Biff, who was one of my favorite reviewers, especially in the written medium, in any medium. I just love his writing. And he reviewed a game called Heaven and Ale, which is a game that I've been pretty hot on recently. I love it. I think it's great. I read Dan's review and he hated it. And my first reaction was like, Dan, you're wrong. And then the more I thought about it, I was thinking, no, Dan's reasons, everything that he says about it that he doesn't like are the reasons why I like it. And it's just interesting that two people can view the same traits of a game, one person negatively and one person positively. I mean, the famous example is your hatred of Ra and my love of it, pretty much for the same reasons. And Cosmic Encounter, pretty much for the same reasons. I hate it. I love it. Takes all types.
True story.
When I consider bias in board game reviews, bias in any medium, I would much rather have a biased review than an unbiased review. I think I was reading a review of Concordia recently. I tend to read reviews for games that I already know and love. I don't just read reviews for purchasing decisions. Again, I find joy in the completion of a game. When people describe something to me in a way that I haven't thought about, I find that fascinating and fun. So anyway, I still read reviews of games that I already know that I like. And I read this review of Concordia, and it was basically a specs list of the game. There's wheat in the game. There's cloth in the game. It was like, as I was reading, I'm like, You're not telling me anything. You're not telling me your opinion of the game. You're not telling me about the experience of the game. I mean, it was essentially flipping through the rule book. I could have gotten the same thing from flipping through the rule book, from looking at the file thread on Board Game Geek. I mean, it was just bare bones, no analysis, nothing about it. And the thing is, I think to have any sort of analysis that's worth anything involves bias.
Agreed.
Apparently, I've said all there is to say on the topic. So I want to go back to something. So we've talked about negative reviews, and specifically, if we receive a copy of a game from the publisher, we review it. And sometimes that's positive, sometimes that's negative. Has there been any response to negative reviews from publishers? Because that's one of the accusations too, is you say nice things about these games so that publishers will respond nicely to you.
To be honest, we have had some negative response from publishers about negative reviews. Most of the negative responses come from small, like the first time on Kickstarter people who are just like, no, you don't understand my game. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm sure I don't. But it wasn't fun. And so, sorry. And that's not a big deal. We have at least one more major publisher who I don't think I'm going to say who it is, but they stopped sending us games when we posted a review that was negative and accused us of not understanding the heavier games. And I was just like, okay, I guess so. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What can you do? That's how it is. I mean, we've had some publishers who are very just like grateful that you spent time with their game, even if it's a negative review. Most of the publishers just kind of ignore it if it's negative. And I think that's probably the right thing to do if you're a publisher and you see a negative review that you disagree with. Really, the only time I think if there's like a rules error, mm-hmm. I think publishers should send a message, because it's so strange. Like the tiniest rule errors can make a huge mm-hmm. difference in how fun a game is. But if a publisher sees a review and they're just really unhappy with it, and even if they think it's unfair, I think they should just leave it alone. Like, just don't engage. Some people are going to hate your game. The thing that was really disappointing about the publisher who stopped sending us games was that I had heard the person on a podcast a few months earlier talking about reviews and how they decide who to send review copies to. He was saying like, oh yeah, like it doesn't matter if a review is negative. We want it to be posted. We want it to be shared. We want people talking about it. So we just have to decide who we're going to send it to, and we want people to post it. So I was like, okay, good. Like mm-hmm. that's a good attitude. It's not a big deal if it's a negative review. But then all of a sudden there was this thing and we reviewed a game and it wasn't that great. And it wasn't even like a horrible review. It's just like, this game isn't amazing. It's just kind of an okay game. And he was like, well, I'm not going to send you anything right now. Okay, that's fine. We just moved on. We did other stuff. We had no shortage of things to write about after that. So in the end, it worked out okay.
And I think it's worth pointing out, too, that was definitely the exception rather than the rule. And it's also worth pointing out that it didn't really change anything for us. I mean, we still reviewed that publisher's games. We just purchased them. We've posted negative reviews since then. I mean, it's not like it really changed our attitude about it. The thing about it is, life is too short to say things you don't mean. So I mean, if a game isn't fun, I don't want to tell people, no, it's really fun. You're going to love it. Spend your money on it. You know how much I hate spending money? I hate spending money on things that are stupid. I just paid for lawn care service, and that feels like such a boring thing to spend money on. I don't want to spend money on my weeds, but you have to do it sometimes. But games are supposed to be a fun hobby. You're doing it for entertainment. You don't want to pay money to see a bad movie. You don't want to pay good money to eat at a bad restaurant, and you don't want to pay good money to play a bad game. And I just think the community is so small that it doesn't make sense to praise a game if it isn't worthy of praise. Of course, there's the other side of the coin. I don't think it's worth putting down a game, you know, just to put down a game, but I don't really know anyone who does that. I'm sure there are some contrarians out there who...
We should start a new website that's just all negative reviews and just like, just rip apart every game. That's probably a thing that the community needs.
It is. I'm pretty sure we should start that spinoff. So how do you go about writing a negative review?
Negative reviews are easy to write and hard to write. They're easy to write because it's kind of cathartic to just vent all your frustrations about how a game is broken and terribly designed and ugly and all that stuff. And it's just like, ah, this feels great to get this all out. Mm-hmm. I don't like the results of that. Like when I do that for a review, that's always a first draft for me. Mm-hmm. And there are definitely games in the past couple of years that I've just like been so frustrated about and just like poured all this stuff out. And it's just so easy to go on and on and on about every terrible thing. And that's, mm-hmm. that can be mean. And that's not necessarily like at some point it's not helpful. Like you're not adding any information to the person reading to decide if they would like it. Mm-hmm. I write a first draft where I just write everything and get it out of my system. And then I edit and just try and cut out stuff that's repetitive or doesn't really need to be said or doesn't, you know, like sometimes a little thing bothers you, mm-hmm. but it doesn't really, it's not a big deal, but it's just like, because everything else is not right about it, it bothers you. And it's like, okay, I'll just cut that stuff out. If I talk about like four different things that are broken, but really they're, it's all just kind of one part of it. Mm-hmm. I try to combine that stuff together and just kind of like tone it down. I don't want to be mean.
Yeah.
I don't want to be angry. I want to be helpful. I want to be informative about why I didn't like a game. What's harder is writing a game that is just kind of mediocre. Mm-hmm. And it's like fine, but it's not great. And you know, maybe you didn't play it once and had fun. And then you played it the second time and it was like, oh, it's not different the second, like it's not a new experience. It's just, it's like watching a movie that you sort of participate in, but it's not a great movie. So it was like fun once. Like that's just hard because you don't know what to say and you don't want to make it sound like it's horrible, but you also don't want to make it sound like it's great. So it's just, it's difficult to figure out what to say.
It is much easier to write a rant or a rave just because you have emotional energy either way. And you need, you know, it's easy. It's much easier to express that energy.
What's your negative review approach, John?
Well, kind of what you said, it's the same thing. If it's a rant, I just need to get it all out. And then I need to edit the heck out of it because I find negative reviews so much harder to write than positive reviews. I agree that mediocre reviews are the hardest of all to write because you kind of have to get up that energy to say what needs to be said. What you said, I think, Wolfie, makes a lot of sense. You can have a negative review and not be mean about it. It's possible to write a negative review with respect. And so That's kind of how I try to approach it. My first reaction to a game that I don't like is, why did I waste my time on this? And so I'm almost angry about it. Why, you know, instead of playing something good, I played this. I got all of my friends involved. And especially with bad games that make it to the reviewing stage, I have to play them again and again and again because I want to make sure that what I'm seeing as negative is actually there and isn't just a bad group, wasn't just a bad experience once, is actually something about the game that I don't like. And I want to make sure that I have the words to articulate it. And so for me, a negative review is a lot of work because I want to make sure that when someone comes to me with an accusation of you didn't play it enough, I can say, no, I did. I just don't like it. And here's the reason why. So for me, the hard part about it is you just have to keep playing it even when you don't want to, in order to articulate it.
Yeah. Especially when your friends give you dirty looks like, oh, we're playing this game again.
Yep. There's a guy at my game night and he says, oh, I like everything we played. Oh, except that one game. And I'm like, yeah. That's one of the hard parts about being a reviewer is I have to foist all sorts of games on my friends. And usually they're pretty okay with it. They're open to trying new things. Even if it's something that doesn't look like they'll enjoy, they'll give it a shot once. It's that once that's the key.
Yeah.
So with a bad game, I usually have to find four different groups or whatever to get the playtime in that I need.
In one of the discussions about biased reviewers or whatever, I saw someone make a comment that, oh, it only takes an hour to write a written review. And I was like, I just laughed. It takes an hour to summarize the rules and then write a half a paragraph about, yes, I had fun. But it takes me, if you count the amount of hours reading the rule books and playing the games and then writing the first draft, which takes at least an hour, probably 2 hours, if not more, and then rewriting and rewriting again and editing and taking photos, it takes a lot of time and effort.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are written reviews that are just kind of dashed off and let go into the ether, but that's that hasn't been my experience, at least, of trying to write a real analysis of a game, just because you kind of have to know what you're talking about. And my writing process is always just thinking about it a long, long time before even a word comes onto the page. So it takes an hour. You might be able to tell those reviews that just take an hour, and maybe that's what this person was upset about. I don't know.
Perhaps.
We've complained a lot about readers accusing of bias. How dare they? Why do you keep doing reviews? Why do you keep writing reviews? Why do you still run I Slay the Dragon?
Huh. Now that you mention it, okay, I quit. I'm quitting now. Goodbye.
Never mind. I take it back.
Just kidding. Kenneth won't let me leave. I still enjoy playing games. I still enjoy playing a variety of games. And I still like writing. And so it's something that's just a part of me. To be honest, I think that I've kind of slowed down over the past few months, like intentionally taking fewer review copies, playing fewer games, writing fewer reviews. Part of the reason why I'm trying to do this podcast and other different things is just to kind of get out of the rut of, you know, there's so many games, and some games have fun things to talk about, and some things have vicious things to talk about, and a lot of them is just you feel like you're saying the same thing over and over again. But it's, I don't know, it's just I have thoughts about things, and I like to put them somewhere. I have the reviewer brain in me is always on, which is unfortunate sometimes, because when I'm playing a game, I can't help but analyze everything that's going on. And I think there are games that I would enjoy more if I would just didn't do that.
Like turn it off.
Like when there's small things about a game that are just oh no, that's going to ruin it. But if I just wasn't thinking about it, it wouldn't bother me. I wouldn't notice, but I can't help thinking about it. So I don't know. It's just when I play a game, I think about it and I want to write about it. So it just keeps going. Plus, we've got a group of people. It's fun to chat with each other and talk about games. And
yeah, writing in community makes a big difference.
I would not still be doing this probably if it was just me. Possibly if it was just me and you, we would have both just been wiped out. But
indeed. I think for me, I'm not as enamored of the Cult of the New. I like a lot of older games. I'm fine with a lot of older games. And it just seems like there are so many that come out every year. There's no possible way to keep up. The reason why I keep writing reviews is I keep wanting to play new games, because I keep thinking, what if I discover a new classic? What if there's a new game that is really amazing in bringing something new to the table? And that is exciting to me. And of course, like I said at the beginning, whenever I find a new experience, I want to write about it, because there's a completion in it when I sit down to write. And so I guess that's why I keep reviewing, is I'm eager to find something that will amaze me. And yeah, just have to write about those things that I find. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. This has been Breathing Flames, a tabletop gaming podcast from islaythedragon.com. With me tonight was Wolfie, the founder of I Slay the Dragon. I'm John, Farmer Lenny on I Slay the Dragon. If you are interested in seeing what else we do, you can check out all of our reviews, positive and negative, on islaythedragon.com. That's still free to do. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. I think we're on Google Plus. We might even have a Patreon or something.
I think we're the only ones on Google Plus now.
I think we are. It's
actually, we're the last one left.
It's quite a frontier there. So thank you for listening. We appreciate it. If you want to keep talking about what we discussed here, you can send us a message on Twitter. You can find our Board Game Geek Guild or any other way that you want to talk to us in the comments of this post. But thank you so much for listening and keep slaying dragons. Did it work this time?
You really got to work on the
the sign off.
Have some courage, man.
Keep slaying those dragons.
There it is. That's the one. That's a keeper.